ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
I don't think there's a president in US history that's really presented, you know, such a threat to global efforts to cut pollution as Trump has.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
Anthony Albanese has written to British Prime Minister Keir Starmer to offer support for removing Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of royal succession. Australia is the first Commonwealth country to back the proposal, with the Prime Minister suggesting that Australia likes to be first. And the landmark Royal Commission into Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion has officially begun. Commissioner Virginia Bell has outlined the scope of that inquiry. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelas.
And I'm Claudia Long.
And Claudia, Anthony Albanese has now officially become the first leader of a Commonwealth nation to back Andrew Mountbatten Windsor to be removed from the royal line of succession. Now, just to be clear, former is the key word here, Prince Andrew is still eighth in line to be king. So just to get a sense of the urgency and perspective here, we are not about to see him rise to king, if you're kind of confused about that. A lot of things would have to go wrong for a lot of people.
And yes.
It would be a very tragic melodrama to lead to this. But clearly, this is all about sending a signal to the public that the Prime Minister and this government thinks this alleged behaviour is outrageous, despicable, not one something he wants to be involved in. Is that what it's ultimately about?
Yeah, I think that's right, PK. And I think there's probably obviously a few reasons why the Prime Minister would rather talk about this than perhaps some of the other domestic policy issues that we've heard about on this very program over the past days and weeks. It was interesting hearing the Prime Minister say that Australia likes to be first, because I think in foreign policy, it's actually very rare for us to like to be first. I mean, I don't know if that stood out to you as well, PK. I was like, do we like to be first? We often seem to move with very similar countries. We're very cautious.
I noticed that too. It was funny that he was, I'm first. I thought, oh, I don't know if you love being first, but okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I was like, we always love being first this time. It's like always is this time. Anyway, you're right. I think this is something that they're clearly trying to say, look, we find this behaviour despicable. This person does not belong in the line of succession, and will then be writing to other heads of other Commonwealth nations about this. I think you're right that things would have to be almost Shakespearean levels of going badly for someone like Andrew to ever make it to the throne.
Just a symbol then, isn't it?
It is a symbol. Yeah, exactly. And it's about, I guess, drawing a line in the sand and saying, look, this is not the sort of person who is fit to ever be Australia's head of state. And I think, PK, this is probably something that, you know, you'd think most of the public would agree, right, that someone like this who's accused of the things that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is accused of doesn't belong in the line of succession, whether or not you agree that there even should be a line of succession, whether or not you're Republican or a monarchist or anything like that, that somebody who is accused of these kinds of things and the friendship that he, you know, had with Jeffrey Epstein, who was convicted while they were still friends of soliciting a teenager. So that alone, that's before you even get to the allegations against former Prince Andrew himself. Now, those are ones that he strenuously denies. There are, of course, still questions around that. And very sadly, the woman who accused him of these things has died. And so there may always be questions that remain. But I think the thing about this that is able to be said is that this is not the sort of person that many people would want to be a king of Australia, even if it's very unlikely that that would ever happen. Now, actual removal requires an act of the UK Parliament. It also requires the support of the 14 Commonwealth countries, including Australia. The King Charles, his brother, has said that the law must take its course when it comes to former Prince Andrew. So it obviously seems like the palace is now not going to stand in the way of any attempts to remove him either. And of course, again, we should say that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor denies all of these allegations, PK. But I think for the Prime Minister to come out against this, it is that line in the sand, but it is also something that isn't some of the other policy issues that have been dogging the government lately, including the so-called ISIS brides, for example.
So-called. Problematic term, isn't it? Look, I, for afternoon briefing that I present 4 o'clock on the ABC News channel, if you're not also a consumer of that, you should be, also on ABC iView, but I've interviewed Andrew Lowney, who's a biographer of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, and put to him actually Australia's first move on this. And he was just like scathing, saying it's just symbolism. Australia should instead actually be doing something like launching an inquiry into the time where this man was trade envoy and some of the allegations around all of that, and actually should be doing something substantive rather than just symbolism, which is what this ultimately is. I thought that was an interesting perspective, that it's about basically, you know, sending a signal about how you feel about him, but actually nothing tangible that leads to perhaps more accountability for the monarchy, because there are questions more broadly for the monarchy here too, not just one bad apple, but actually the systemic nature of perhaps broadly cover up, you know, turning a blind eye, all of those behaviours, right?
And I think too, like, there is obviously a lot of anger in parts of the community and people who have been following this issue, that how on earth did people manage to get away with this for so long, and this absolutely vile abuse and alleged abuse, because some of these things are still allegations, but some have been proven, vile abuse of women and girls, and how this was allowed to happen for such a long time, why people like Andrew Mountbatten Windsor found it appropriate to be friends with people like Jeffrey Epstein after some of these things were proven in court. It is one of those things where I think people want some kind of actual justice. And I think a lot of those feelings are still very raw, understandably. And people want something tangible, particularly given that Mr. Epstein, of course, is now dead and cannot face justice. I think there is still certainly a desire from many in the community for those who were his friends, for those who faced these allegations themselves, to actually face perhaps more dire consequences for what they're alleged to have done.
And now the Prime Minister has put all this out there. He obviously wants to send this message, which we've been saying, but equally is not particularly interested in, you know, putting his foot on the pedal on a republic, even though he always starts the sentence, "I am a Republican." However, you know, his view still is that Australians aren't that interested in having a referendum again, generally, but on a republic. And I think that's interesting, right? What will it ever take? You know, look at all these allegations. You know, you'd think that the reputation of the monarchy is at the moment really in tatters, and yet still no movement from Labor.
I think particularly too, when we used to hear all the time, "Oh, well, when Queen Elizabeth dies, that'll be when we might get a republic referendum." And now it's, well, obviously she's dead and King Charles on the throne, who's significantly less popular, is my understanding, than his mother was. And yes, there is this younger generation coming through of Prince William and Kate. But that used to be the so-called, you know, very British term, the Fab Four, like the Beatles, of Kate, Harry, William and Meghan. And obviously that's now fractured as well. And so you wonder how much staying power there is. And you're so right, PK, like, if not now, at this particularly low ebb. And I think the difference too, because we heard about, you know, the Annus Horribilis, right, decades ago. But I think the difference is for the monarchy now, that a lot of that was personal and inside the family. This is stretching far outside of the royal family. This has had an impact, allegedly, on many other people, and also draws into question not just their conduct with each other, but with those around them as well. So I think that is a very interesting point that, you know, if not now, when would the public be looking for that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, if not now. I mean, I suppose one of the other things that I got from that interview with the author and investigator was essentially that he thinks it's going to get much worse for the royal family from all of the work he's done. So if that is the case, right, throwing it back to you, Claudia, that's when perhaps you might see not a shift that they're going to stand up at a podium and say, "We are announcing a referendum," but you might see a change in tone perhaps. Maybe we're not there yet, but if it keeps unravelling and continues to be a crisis for the monarchy, and that, you know, King Charles somehow gets embroiled in terms of what he knew, at least, right? Mm-hmm. Then that it does become a bigger problem, I think.
Yeah, exactly, because you're facing those key questions of accountability and how this was allowed to happen for so long, even just that friendship and the questions around judgment and who knew what when. And particularly too, I think, after the last referendum that we had in Australia, the government was very burnt by that. You know, I think that's pretty fair to say, don't you, PK, is they aren't rushing to have another referendum. But I think the difference on something like this is that, yes, like there are culture wars around whether or not Australia is a republic or a monarchy, or whether, frankly, you just don't really care either way. I think that's also a big group of people in Australia, is like, you know, people who aren't particularly happy with how things are, but also aren't particularly unhappy. I wonder if this could perhaps be, if this debate does happen, a bit different to the last referendum. It's very different issues. It's more about Australia's place in the world as an independent country and moving away from that part of our history and essentially having a head of state who is not Australian.
Yes, that's right. That's right. All right. So the Prime Minister kind of has owned the media cycle by getting this story out. And it's meant, I think it's the first day in quite a few days where the ISIS brides issue hasn't been the biggest story in our country, right? So he's been able to at least get his kind of spin on something as the dominant story. So I think that's a bit interesting, because I think they've struggled really to get open air or at least clarify their view on issues that have become a bit difficult for them in the last week or so. Now we've got the official beginning of the Royal Commission. So, you know, from the royals to the Royal Commission, there's a lot of royal in this country. The Royal Commission into Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion has essentially kicked off today. 2 months after that horrific anti-Semitic attack in Bondi, 15 people, of course, were killed. Everyone knows that, and everyone should know that. It's horrific, and I can't believe it's still very, very recent and difficult to get your head around. Commissioner Virginia Bell outlined how the inquiry would be conducted. So today was very ceremonial. She acknowledged other forms of religious racism, interestingly, and said the inquiry would focus on tackling anti-Semitism as a starting point for strengthening our bonds of social cohesion. But there's a lot to cover in a very small amount of time. Let's not forget that the Albanese government, that really was taken kicking and screaming, in my view, to this Royal Commission, but did eventually capitulate, now have a Royal Commission that they want all done and dusted by December this year. I mean, I'm saying it, I've said it before, good luck to you. That is not going to happen.
It is incredibly brief, I think, particularly when you look at the timelines for other royal commissions recently. So the Aged Care Royal Commission, that took over 2 years. The Disability Royal Commission, that was 4.5 years. The Child Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse Royal Commission, 5 years, half a decade. Now, RoboDebt, the Royal Commission into that was a bit shorter. That was August 2022 to July 2023. But I think, PK, the scope, the timeline of this Royal Commission is very brief, particularly when you're talking about issues that are historic. They are historical, they are complicated, they are wide-ranging, and they are also connected to and intersecting with a number of other different issues in the community as well. So all of that comes together when you're interrogating how on earth this horrific terror attack happened and what led to it and if it could have been prevented. And there are so many different threads that are going to be a part of that. I'm not sure how they're going to manage to do that in less than a year, to be perfectly honest. That is an incredibly difficult task that has been given to the Royal Commission. And particularly when you look at issues of equal complexity that have had years to do their work. It is going to be interesting to see how they manage that. I mean, we did hear from Virginia Bell, of course, today, saying that there's going to be a focus on four key areas. And so the first one is the prevalence of anti-Semitism in Australia, as well as what's driving it, whether that's ideological, whether it's religious ideology, things like that. The second is around recommendations for law enforcement agencies, so how they can combat anti-Semitism and respond to it and stop it. The third is examining the circumstances specifically around the terror attack on December the 14th at Bondi Beach. And then the fourth is making recommendations on how to strengthen social cohesion. PK, one of those things alone could be a year-long royal commission. Like, it is, those things are all incredibly complicated. If you want to do them justice and interrogate how to make sure something like this doesn't happen again, and how to make sure that Jewish people in Australia not only feel safe but are safe as well. And I think, you know, the Royal Commission is also going to hear from the community, which is obviously a good thing. So Virginia Bell said that anybody can make a submission, and she specified that she was interested in hearing from Jewish Australians who have experienced this kind of anti-Semitism, no matter where they are, essentially, in Australia. So there will be that community voice, but it is going to be very hard in this length of time to fully examine these issues, PK. It's a difficult task.
It is, and which is why I think it is inevitable that it'll have to be extended. She will ask for more time. It'll happen. The reason the government never wanted that is they want to keep it very short and sweet. Mm-hmm. They don't want it to roll into an election cycle. But you know what? You don't get your sort of hopes and dreams as a government. You have to live with the circumstances that you're confronted with. And so they're going to have to suck it up, is my view, and get over themselves and just deal with the ugliness sometimes of what people have to hear, which will be confronting at times, I think, and may come back as blowback to governments and others. But, you know, that's the point of the thing. You want to get to the bottom of what's motivating some of these behaviours and speech, and
make sure they never happen again.
Properly have a plan to tackle it, like not just sort of talk in circles forever about it, right?
And I think too, like with the Royal Commissions, I mean, as I was going back through the timelines of these other Royal Commissions today, and it also makes you think about how many of them have recommendations that are frankly just sitting on a shelf and did do so for decades, in some cases, for years. There are Royal Commissions that made recommendations like the Indigenous Deaths in Custody Royal Commission from decades ago, where things have not been actioned. Same with aged care, disability, child abuse, you know, the most horrific, most shameful parts, I think, of our history that deserve to be interrogated but are not then acted on as well. And that is the other side of this, which is like, if you're going to have a Royal Commission, are you going to act on its recommendations, and are you going to give it enough time to do its work?
Now, I have been sharing, I won't name these other high-profile journalists, but I've been very much in a comical group text this morning in relation to high-speed rail. I'll tell you why. If you're as old as some of us and you've been around for so many election cycles, you've seen the excitement of Anthony Albanese from his time of even as infrastructure minister to talk about high-speed rail. There is a nexus between, politics is a bit difficult. Here's my shiny high-speed rail proposal.
Look at my train.
We've got another one today. Look at my train.
Look at my train.
A mate of mine said also to me this morning, it's like sort of Thomas the Tank Engine Prime Minister. Good, yeah? So good. So good.
Do you reckon he wears the top hat, like the controller?
So good. I just love it. So Thomas the Tank Engine was out again. The idea re-emerging every election cycle. Now, outside of an election cycle, but hey, maybe kicking on around one, $229.6 million funding injection for planning works between Newcastle and Sydney. It will be, personal favourite of mine,
shovel ready.
So the shovel is ready to enter the ground to shovel as early as 2028, which, lo and behold, my friends, is potentially the election year. It's an obsession of the Prime Minister's. It's a bit bells and whistles, but is it really? Come on. I mean, I've been waiting for a fast train for years. I'm going to be dead and there'll be no fast trains.
When I read Shovel Ready this morning, I sort of had a bit of a flash. I was like, oh, my God, here we go again. I felt like I was in Utopia a little bit, which is basically a documentary, I have to say, as anybody who has worked in and around the public service, or perhaps in other government funded agencies like the ABC, might be able to tell you. The Shovel Ready is very, very utopia core, I have to say. But you're right, I mean, this is, if this does in fact get delivered, like this is, you know, really useful for people who live in a place like Newcastle. We know that Sydney is a place where people really struggle to purchase or rent a home, and that people are moving further out towards satellite cities, towards regional centres like Newcastle, but still want to work in Sydney and need to work in Sydney as well. And of course, PK, I mean, you know, the PM's moving to the Central Coast himself, so maybe he'll get a faster commute when it eventually starts up. To be clear, I'm not saying that's why he's doing it, but you know.
No evidence of that.
No. To be clear, and in all fairness, he could be one of many, many, many beneficiaries of
this.
Does
it go right to Copacabana?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. But to be clear, I mean, like you, I'm quite interested in high-speed rail. As someone who used to get the bus from Melbourne to Canberra every 2 weeks, I had a lot of time to think about the benefits of high-speed rail, specifically if it went along the Hume Highway. You know, I'm always excited to hear about it.
I'm always excited too, but I am sceptical too.
Oh, yes. Well, it's better to not get your hopes up because then you'll never be disappointed. But if it does happen, then it's good.
Well, that's my approach to life generally. Always have your expectations so low that you can only have a good day.
Exactly. And if we do get it, when is the Politics Now outside broadcast happening on the high-speed train, PK?
Ah, gosh, great question. Now, Claudia, speaking of things that take longer than expected, boom, boom, you had a very important exclusive this week about the lengthy timeframe for a national database to track the criminal histories of childcare workers in real time. Of course, that's a huge story because of the alarming revelations on Four Corners that have led to I think really a reckoning in relation to our child safety and childcare systems. Why is it taking so long?
Good question, PK. That was my question too.
You didn't get that answer.
Well, we're still sort of trying. I think there's differing views from different jurisdictions that we've spoken to. So Josie Taylor and I looked at this database. So if you haven't heard of it, it's essentially a national real-time database of the criminal histories of people who have a Working with Children check. And the problem that was exposed really in the Royal Commission more than a decade ago was that different regulations and different systems in different states and territories were essentially allowing people who had breached their Working with Children check order or who hadn't been given one, and there are lots of reasons why that happens, but they were able to move to another state and they would be able to get one. And that was exposed as a key loophole. And so what this system is meant to do is essentially act as a national database so all of the states can be across who is banned where. And every state except Western Australia has passed legislation that if you are banned in one area, you're banned in all. Western Australia is expected to pass that in the coming months, by the way, so that will happen. So states and territories agreed at the last Council of Attorney General to connect to the pilot version of this by the end of this year. When we went to those states and territories, we kind of got mixed answers, essentially. So the federal government said that the pilot is ready for states and territories to connect to, but we understand that New South Wales says that there isn't actually currently something for them to connect to, and that's still what we're trying to get to the bottom of. So shamelessly, PK, I'm going to put a plug in. If you know more about this, please get in touch. We have a way to do that securely on our website, abc.net.au. This actually ties well into what we've been talking about so far, PK, because we heard from the parents and from Luke Twyford, the Queensland Child Commissioner, in his report where he actually investigated how Ashley Paul Griffith was able to get away with sexually abusing children for more than two decades. They raised that they would like to see governments treat this with the urgency that they do counterterrorism. And I think that that is a frustration that is shared by many members of the community that we speak to on this issue, that there is a sense that, you know, it comes in peaks and troughs where governments are really focused on it for a short period of time, like, for instance, when a Four Corners report comes out, but then over time it sort of falls onto the back burner a little bit. And so I think they are certainly hopeful that that won't happen with this, but they are worried, given that 2029 is when this will be fully operational, why that is and the impact that that could have.
Well, it's important work, and it's the thing I hate the most, the kind of, and the media cycle is part of that problem. You know, there's a sort of burst of activity and scrutiny, and you can feel governments on the ropes. And there's some natural reasons for this, the media caravan moves on to perhaps another issue. You know, the world is full of cycles. And I feel like sometimes the consequences a bit of a government go slow because their feet are not to the fire for a little period. And so, yeah, that point you make about, you know, counterterrorism and how you can try and resolve things is a really good one, because this is a system that people don't feel very confident in, I think it's fair to say. It's really shaken people's confidence, and there's nothing more important, obviously, than the safety of our children. So, you know, you'd think it would be top of everyone's to-do list. And you know, it's incredibly consequential, and I think really dangerous for governments to err at all in this space.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I mean, this is an example of what we were talking about earlier, right? When the Royal Commission recommended in 2015, they did a report on working with children's checks, and they recommended something like this, and it only was announced last year, more than a decade after that recommendation happened. And if you read the report from the Royal Commission at the time, it says, this has gone on too long, this must be addressed immediately. And it took another decade. And I think that says a great deal.
It says an absolute great deal. Well, Claudia, Tuesdays with you are special.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, PK. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for Politics Now for today. David Spears will join me for the latest on the podcast tomorrow. If you have a question, send it to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and Fran and I will give you a special episode answering your questions. Bye, Claudia.
See you, PK.